It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I just love that drum loop, don't you? Let's see. It is Titanic Tuesday. And gosh, what a Titanic Tuesday it is. It's Titanic Tuesday on the horn. It is the 24th day of July, 2018. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll get that out of the way early. And we have thanks to send out this evening to our subscribers, because that's how this stuff works. We always thank the subscribers at the beginning of the program because, well, their subscriptions roll in at different times. So want to make sure that we don't, me and that mouse in my pocket, I want to make sure that I don't forget. So thanks go out to Jason in California, and thanks go out to Pam in Washington State, first and foremost. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. That's our subscribers for the 24th day of any given month. But there are other people to thank as well, because, our dear friends Mike and Kathy Malloy also put out the call. We're trying to get to Netroots Nation. I don't know yet if we're going to make it. It's a sort of a last minute sprint to be able to do so. A lot of folks have jumped in to help. Oh, wait a minute. Where's that? I know where that's coming from. I have to turn that off every blessed time. Oh, well. All right. Okay, so first of all, let me say, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Madcap Zany Wacky Real-Time Screwball Multimedia Extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, well, by Jove, run on over to headon.live and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. We've got a good group gathered together for Titanic Tuesday. More will be along presently, I suspect. If you do jump in, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Jack and Laborman and Silent R. Lamar and Paul, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space today because I trust that the... maybe he's just letting he got his first injection of fresh knee grease yesterday, so maybe Sparky's letting that work in. Yeah, and you'll also be moderated by pinch hit midweek utility chat room moderator and all around great guy Steve from Georgistan. Okay, awesome. I think it's fun. I have a heck of a good time in there. But like I said, we have thanks to send out, and I'll be writing. You know, some of these folks don't even necessarily don't even necessarily participate, don't listen to the program, but, you know, Malloy says Bob's our friend and Bob would like to, you know, well, and people respond. And so I'll be sending out thanks. Thank you very kindly to Michael. Thank you very kindly indeed to another Michael who says, go, brother. Thank you, Michael. We may have the beginnings of a fraternity of Michael here. Thanks very well to Norm, very much indeed to Norman. Thank you very kindly, Norman. Thank you to Bruce, who says, go for it, Bob. Thank you, Bruce. Thank you very much. Let's see here. I have to. Oh, by the way, I have good news. Bob in Texas's challenge got met last night. That's huge. Thank you to Karen out in California. Let's see here. And let's see. Thanks to Paul there in the chat room. Thank you, Paul. And I've got there's a whole lot of scrolling that goes on here. Thank you very kindly to Nancy. Thank you, Nancy. And thanks very much to... to our buddy Samson. Thank you, Samson. And I think that covers most of it. I hope it does. But in terms of getting to Netroots Nation, we're making progress. We are not there yet. And the general fundraising goal for the month of July, so we can have fundraising free radio, hopefully, stands at $615. And that's, if we wipe that out, then we'll be done with July's fundraising. And we'll go on and take a look at beating the Swede. Also, trashing Fitz Walker stand, courtesy of Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. So, thank you one and all who are helping out so far. I'm sorry for the drama, but that's how it's going to play out. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for letting me know that we are hot and true on both the HeadOn.live and the White Rose Society streams. That's reassuring. Now, where to begin? I've got a pretty good idea where most of the other talk radio, if that's what we're calling it, where most of the other programs have gone today. And look, Donald J. Trump, Julius Geezer, the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, is going to be the shiny object for as long as he remains in the White House. And he's going to capture our attention. And there were even other hearings on, there were hearings on Capitol Hill today that garnered some attention. But for me, the most important thing that happened all day long, at least in Washington, D.C., happened in the House Natural Resources Committee. And, of course, it's the Republican-controlled House, so there's going to be a certain amount of madness involved. But it was kind of special for me. I mentioned it at the very end of the program last night. It wasn't on C-SPAN. I checked in. It's about 10 a.m. on C-SPAN. Just and look, I'm not trying to work Classy Todd's side of the corner, side of the street, or Steve from Georgia stands. But I tuned in just long enough to hear. I think she was Mary from North Carolina. Say that I tolerated that Obama for 8 miserable years, and the least these people can do is hush up and let us enjoy having our president, or something equally obnoxious and maggoty crazy. Because, you know, there's not a big comparison between Barack Obama and Marcus Aurelius. No, there wasn't an eight year long criminal conspiracy, among other things. We're 18 months into the Trump administration, and people are, well, in any other circumstance, I have a feeling the racketeer influenced corrupt organizations statute, RICO, would probably be in play. Which reminds me, this kind of snuck past on Moran Monday yesterday, but it is Titanic Tuesday. Remember, Titanic Tuesday is a day in which we memorialize great moments in Titanic right-wing intellect, named for something our buddy Jim, who I hope is doing okay. I've been worried about Jim. He said he was going to the hospital last week and was feeling very poorly. I hope he's feeling better, and I hope he's home. But Jim tuned in to local white wing radio several years ago and heard the morning monotone. And he's not on the air anymore, but my God, it was a monotone for the ages. It was, oh, it so was. I heard one of the mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers that actually listened to him read the newspaper every morning call in and say, Steve, how come you reckon it is there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Seen them down in the mines one time. There's all kinds of seashells in the rocks there in the top there in the coal mine. How come you reckon that is? And Steve, the morning monotone, answered, well, caller. Yeah, so serious. So full of his own authority. Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. No, seriously. Mm-hmm. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic kifta skewers for it. No, all kinds of stuff on that Titanic table moving around amongst the plates. Yeah, so that's what Titanic Tuesday is. And because our government is infested with fools, idiots, grifters, skeezes, sleazes, and various and sundry other manifestations of, maggots, M-A-G-A-T-S. They don't think much before they don't look before they leap. And even if they did, you would probably get the general, hey y'all, watch this, that you get under most similar circumstances. And so it was that I was reading over the weekend, and I discovered that Canada is considering using its own Magnitsky Act, because they've got one, to retaliate not against, in terms of trade, American business generally, but against the racketeer-influenced corrupt organizations that do business with sanctioned parties on the Magnitsky Act list. You know, we pressured Canada. We need you all to pass one of these, too. Could you pass one of these, please? Sure would be helpful. We'd love it if you pass one of these. And so Canada did. And in some far corner of Ottawa, apparently they are considering using their own Magnitsky Act to respond against people who do business with filthy Russian oligarchs. Yeah, that would be delightfully ironic, wouldn't it? I thought so. Yeah, I'm not quite entirely sure what Mary was getting at there from North Carolina on Washington Journal. Brother Deacon Asa asks, by tolerating Barack Obama for 8 years, do these freaks mean they burned him in effigy for 8 years? Because payback's a some bitch, ain't it? Well, there was the burning in effigy. There was the signs that said, if Scott Brown can't do it, meaning killing the Affordable Care Act, then Browning will, meaning the gun manufacturer. There was the steady litany of imprecatory prayers that Barack Obama would die some horrible death in office, offered up, of course, by a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians, of course. I mean, who else? So, there, like I said, we've got a lot of Moran Monday material with which to work. But I want to start. I want to start with what captured my attention. Like I said, it wasn't on C-SPAN. The live video feed, you had to go over to the House, naturalresources.house.gov to find the feed. But every time I close this program, as I noted last night, I extend thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And that is not, that is in no wise just a throwaway term. I know the work that Coal River Mountain Watch does. I know the danger that is associated with it and has been associated with it. I know the danger of living and working right smack dab in the middle of the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone, because it's awfully hard to fight it from somewhere else. Say, I don't know, a tower in San Francisco or New York or an office building in D.C. There's work that gets done, but when it comes right down to being the sharp, pointy tip of the spear, you kind of got to be there. And Coal River Mountain Watch is there each and every day. And so today, this hearing that didn't get much publicity at all, but really probably should have, if for no other reason than what a display it was of the willful ignorance of the majority party in the House of Representatives. I don't know how many people watched it, but I managed to capture, in very crude fashion, I managed to capture video and audio of Vernon Haltom. He's the executive director at Coal River Mountain Watch. He's an Air Force veteran. And he was the only, it was 3-1 against. There were three pro-coal thugs. You know, just because you can put on a suit and you know which fork to use with the shrimp versus the oysters doesn't mean you're not a thug. Including one gentleman from Australia who was stunningly clueless. Well, Vernon was outnumbered. They were there to talk about how awesome, just how star-spangled awesome coal is, and how much coal we're going to keep burning throughout the rest of recorded human history, which if we keep burning coal like that, probably won't be long. But Vernon was there to talk about the human impacts of coal. And so since it didn't get much in the way of publicity, and since it didn't even make the screen over at over at C-SPAN, I thought it would be worth our time this evening just to check in and see what Vernon had to say. He was introduced by Committee Chair Paul Gosar, Paul Body Language Gosar. You might recall Paul Gosar from the Peter Strzok circus, declaring that because he was a because he's a dentist, he's an excellent reader of body language. Here's Vernon's introductory statement. Check it out.
You want to push your button, make sure.
Thank you for the invitation to testify today. I'm Vernon Halton, Executive Director of Coal River Mountain Watch in Nayoma, West Virginia. Our mission is to stop the destruction of our communities and the environment by mountaintop removal mining, to improve the quality of life in our area, and to help rebuild sustainable communities. Our previous Executive Director, Judy Bonds, won the 2003 Goldman Environmental Prize for North America. In 2011, she died of cancer, the cancer that plagues our communities. In 2015, we dedicated our office building as the Judy Bonds Center for Appalachian Preservation. And this year, we installed enough solar capacity to meet all our electrical needs, and we planted a half acre of industrial hemp to demonstrate the viability of these rapidly growing clean economic options. The Judy Bonds Center is only 10 minutes from the site of the Upper Big Branch mine disaster, which killed 29 miners in our community in 2010. As usual, this disaster resulted from a coal company cutting corners to place profit above people, as well as lax enforcement by regulators. Had the students of Marsh Fork Elementary School been in class the day of the disaster, they would have felt and heard the blast. As it was, these kids spent every school day within 300 feet of a coal preparation plant and just 400 yards downstream from a 2.8 billion gallon toxic coal sludge dam, nearly surrounded by a 2,000 acre mountaintop removal site. After a six-year campaign, Coal River Mountain Watch secured a new school for the kids. From the long history of mine disasters to the Buffalo Creek sludge dam failure that killed 125 residents in 1972 to the ongoing public health crisis of mountaintop removal, King Coal has ruled West Virginia and Central Appalachia with a cruel hand. Whether it's coal to Asia, coal waste to oil, coal to plastics, or coal to rainbows and unicorns, that coal is mined from the bones and the lungs of people who can never be fairly compensated for their injuries or for their lives. Now we're seeing a 25-year high in black lung cases. And three people will die today from diseases associated with mountaintop removal, and more than 1,200 will die this year. These are not just numbers, but real people with families and friends and names like Judy Bonds, Joanne Webb, Larry Gibson, Carol Judy, Vicky Terry, and more who I don't know. The health impacts are no surprise to anyone living downwind of daily blasting in a state where coal companies detonate the explosive equivalent of 744 Tomahawk missiles every day. In some communities, the equivalent of the mother of all bombs is detonated above their homes on a daily basis, and the resulting clouds of silica dust coat the communities and people's lungs. The public health threats of MTR have now been documented in over 30 peer-reviewed studies. These threats include cancer, heart disease, birth defects, and other deadly illnesses at significantly higher rates after accounting for other factors. But state and federal officials have refused to acknowledge the science. In an experiment published in 2014 by scientists with the Mary Babb Randolph Cancer Center of West Virginia University, human lung tissue was exposed to mountaintop removal dust in the lab. The study's title indicates the causation, Appalachian mountaintop mining particulate matter induces neoplastic transformation of human bronchial epithelial cells and promotes tumor formation. After years of work by Coal River Mountain Watch and allies to have our government seriously acknowledge the science and take action, the Department of Interior engaged the National Academies of Science to review the body of existing research. The review began in earnest, collecting evidence and testimony and holding public hearings. Then, after a series of meetings with coal industry lobbyists, DOI abruptly halted the review in August 2017. The DOI's Office of Inspector General has found the DOI had no specific criteria in deciding to end the study and that nearly $500,000 had been wasted. The best innovative and alternative use of coal is to keep it in the ground until we can figure out what's going on. At the very least, we need to pause new mountaintop removal permits unless and until this process can be conclusively demonstrated to be safe for neighboring communities, as called for in the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. And before we seek new and clever ways to prop up a declining industry, we need to effectively enforce the laws and regulations meant to protect our citizens. Thank you.
Pretty powerful stuff, isn't it? And I agree with Brother Deacon Asa, the unicorns and rainbows comment deserves, yes, a cowbell. Because he kind of, you know what else might have snuck past you there? I noticed that we need to stop it until we can figure out what's going on here. That's a direct quote from Julius Geezer talking about banning Muslims from entering the United States because he's afraid somebody's going to, I don't know, blow up one of his tacky-ass golf courses or something. So, again, his own words were handed back to the maggots on the panel there. It's pretty... it's pretty stunning to see this... understand, it takes courage to stand there and sit there and run the risk of getting Peter Strzok'd by the guy who reads body language. But oddly enough, the Republicans on the panel decided they didn't want anything to do with Vernon Haltom. It was pretty clear that he knew his shit and he was not one to suffer fools gladly. The unicorns and rain and new the other line new and clever uses for coal that was directed that was a little barb right between the ribs of the Aussie gentleman sitting to his immediate right who was talking about how we can take cow waste and turn it into oil and sell it for $10 a barrel and make it for $20 a barrel and everybody's got a share and everybody profits. We haven't actually done it yet, but we're partnering with Peabody Energy down in Kentucky and we're building a plant to do that right now. And the subtext to everything he said was, I don't suppose I could interest you in throwing a great big bundle of money at me like you've done a million times before on other coal boondoggles, could I? Right? Yeah? We'll put a few prawns on the barbie and sit back and drink a couple of beers and you can hand us $1 billion and, well, you'll never hear from us. You'll never have to hear from us again. We won't bother you anymore. We'll disappear. Right back to where I came from. Exactly. Too right. Yeah. Sorry. I can't resist using my terrible Australian accent the other three guys, there was a guy from Wyoming and a guy from Utah and a guy from Pennsylvania, I think. Or maybe he was from Wyoming and Utah. But anyway, one little dude was shaking like a leaf on a tree in a storm as he talked about how badly Asia needs American coal and how deeply upset he was. By the way, to those of you in the Horn Family Community Congregation out in the great Pacific Northwest who have done such great work opposing that godforsaken Longview, Washington coal terminal that is presently stopped in its tracks by state government out there, The best I can do is get, this is well past a Laurel and Hardy handshake. You get a full cowbell for that. Absolutely. And my undying gratitude. Because little dude who spoke first, you can look him up if you want to. Little dude who spoke first, he's mightily wrought by the fact that that coal terminal was stopped because he wants to send lots and lots and lots of Merkin coal to Asia. And he wants to do that because he says, we mine coal cleaner here in Merka, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever in the universe under God, than they do there in Indonesia. Never mind the fact that that's not much of a standard. We mine coal better than Indonesia mines coal. And what that probably means is that Americans and Indonesians are being poisoned in the process of extracting coal. And then little Australian guy, I mean, he wasn't little, looked like a rather large black as far as I could tell. He wants to gather up coal waste. He wants to utilize capitalism to clean up coal waste and put it through some sort of water-intensive process whereby it's eventually reduced to particles less than 5 microns in size, you know, ultra-fine particles, the kind that we know that there's no benign ones. And he wants to use it as an adjunct, you know, kind of like when you put a little bit of oat flour in your hamburger to make your hamburger stretch out a little further. Yeah, he wants to stretch oil with coal waste. And along the way, he wants to extract some rare earth minerals. We'll take care of those for you. Don't worry. As a market, we'll get rid of it. Aren't we nice? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then there was Pennsylvania dude who sat and, you know, thank God for the coal industry. The coal that comes from my, from Pennsylvania, well, by Jiminy, it won the First World War and it won the Second World War for us, and I think it can take us into a clean energy future. Harumph. There was lots of harumphing over on the Republican side of the panel. Do we have a name for this Australian? Asks Robert in Australia. The Liberal Party are pushing more coal as a solution for everything. No snowballs in Parliament, but they did bring a lump of coal. I love our politicians. They're so 18th century. Let me see if I can find it. Natural resources. If I can spell naturalsources.house.gov. This 24th, okay. The oversight hearing name was Assessing Innovative and Alternative Uses of Coal. Somehow or another, it all manages to kill somebody. Yes. Well, it says he's from the United Kingdom, but that was no UK accent if I've ever had one. Mr. Julian McIntyre. Founder and CEO of ARC, A-R-Q, in the United Kingdom. But, you know, he did everything but offer to put a prawn on the baby. I'm pretty sure that was not, no. But Julian McIntyre, Robert, if you want to look him up. Maybe I'm wrong, but it sure as shit sounded like an outtake from Crocodile Dundee to me. But the larger point is that the other witnesses sat there and talked about new ways to combust coal and cleaner combustion of coal, and gosh, we need that railroad terminal, and well, you know, solar's all, no, really, we got the, it was the coal whore Hall of Fame today, because we got the solar's all well and good, but well, it's not much good when the sun's not shining now, is it? Ha ha ha, take that, solar energy, ha ha. And the usual, our battery technology isn't up to snuff, blah, blah, blah. Never mind the solar furnaces that continue to create energy even when the sun goes down. Never mind that technology. No, don't be. No. But it was a study, the three witnesses apart from Vernon, in people, I mean, they didn't even pause for a moment to consider the impact on the climate that continuing to burn coal to a fare thee well and a howdy-do and a by your leave will do to the future of humanity on this planet. P.S., not that it's directly climate change related, I'm sure, but the death toll from the massive fires around Athens, Greece, have risen into the 70s. And there are stories being told of people trying to escape the flames by running into the sea and there drowning. And once again, I'm reminded that history may not repeat itself, but it damned well rhymes, because you can go back and read ancient Roman history, and the descriptions of people trying to flee the destruction of from Vesuvius, the eruption at Vesuvius, in both Pompeii and Herculaneum, it's the same thing. People trying to flee into the ocean and being drowned there. Yeah, it's true. Ron in Raleigh says, damn. These jabronis won't be satisfied until West Virginia looks like the landscape in Blade Runner. Gas flares shooting up into the sky, permanently overcast skies, and a steady drizzle of toxic rain. These fuckers will burn down the entire state to put another penny in their pockets. I'm so tired of this shit, I could defecate. I know. Believe me, living here, I know, Ron. But understand, it's not just West Virginia. It's Kentucky, it's Virginia, it's Tennessee. It's Illinois, it's Indiana, it's Alabama, it's Wyoming, Montana, Colorado, Utah. This would be a good time to remind us that the same Department of the Interior who put the kibosh on a study that was on the verge of showing the scientific validity of claims that there's a massive public health disaster unfolding in central Appalachia, the same Department of Interior, run by Ryan Shrinky Zinke, is the one that engaged in a little bit of skullduggery of its own in trying to make national monuments safe for blasting and surface mining and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But the other witnesses sat there, and you would have thought that we were 125 years ago. You would have thought that they had no idea that coal is a problem going into the future, because it is. And so, with that in mind, I'll note that none of the Republicans, like I said, none of the Republicans wanted to tangle with Vernon. They wanted to throw softballs at the their industry pets, or maybe they, the Republican members of the House, were the pets. And they did not want to confront the existential crisis that they support here in Appalachia. They made snide little remarks, but none were directed at Vernon, so there wasn't much he could do about them, except wait until a Democrat's time came and a question was put to him from one of those. By the way, I'll point out one other thing. Representative Lowenthal of New York was the ranking member in the room. There was only one other Democrat. Our side really didn't show up for this. They could have made a record because Vernon, my colleague Bo Webb, a number of other individuals can go chapter and verse for quite a long time on exactly why mountaintop removal needs to end. But there had to be somebody there to ask the questions. And because the Republicans rule the roost, we were lucky to get the one witness that we got. Vernon fielded a couple of more questions. But then he got to give a sort of a summation. And we'll check in with that now.
Removal mining to be performed safely, is there any way that it could be, or do you think it should be ended altogether?
Mountaintop removal should be ended altogether. There's no safe way of doing it. There's no way of keeping the dust on the site. Somehow our regulators, I use that term loosely, have it in their minds that the dust stops at the permit boundary. Well, a lot of these companies can't even maintain a ditch properly. Alpha Natural Resources racks up sediment violation after sediment violation after sediment violation because they cannot even maintain a ditch properly. Yet we're expecting them to blow the tops off of mountains and protect the communities around them and follow those regulations when they can't even maintain a ditch.
Well, let's just talk a little bit more about that relationship between the coal companies in West Virginia and the local communities that live and raise families near these coal mining sites. Do these coal companies understand the harmful impacts of their operations, and are they working with local residents to mitigate these impacts?
I think the top echelons of these companies understand what they're doing, but they don't acknowledge it and they don't do anything about it. In fact, the relationship has been antagonistic. We recently had a public hearing that we invited folks to because we wanted to stop the plans to delay reclamation of one of the sites. And the coal company also wants to bury their tires, their used tires on the site. And we opposed that.
Mm-hmm.
And reclamation actually creates more jobs because you have to pay somebody to do the work. But when the hearing time came, the company already had the parking lot filled up with their trucks. They had the gym at the school filled up with people in their stripes, in their mining clothes, and the entrance to the area lined with very antagonistic folks. And I hate to say it, but, my life and the lives of several of my friends have been threatened by people who say that they're fighting for their jobs when they're really not.
Thank you, and I yield back, Mr.
Doesn't get much plainer than that, does it? You cannot safely do mountaintop removal. So if you want to watch the videos again, if you want to just absorb them, go over to my page on Facebook. And scroll down And please, I don't ask this sort of thing very often. Please, if you do, share these videos around. Share them on your own page. Because again, this hearing didn't get just a whole lot of publicity. And as a consequence, it could go largely, largely unnoted and unremarked, which is also how the deaths of innocent Appalachian people often goes. And the more light we shine on this, the more difficult it becomes for the proponents of the disaster to get away with it in the shadows. Well, thanks, Jason. That's really cool. Jason with a note says, I don't know, man. I think you've got that Aussie brogue pretty well nailed. Anyway, thanks for your focus on this coal crap. I'm skipping my latte tomorrow for a $5 contribution to Coal River Mountain Watch via your Facebook fundraiser. Thank you, Jason. Thank you. Because this, and I cannot highlight enough the value of what Coal River Mountain Watch does. If you do not live with this stuff, if you do not actively oppose it day in and day out, if you don't hear the rattlings and the rumblings of hundreds of Tomahawk cruise missiles worth of explosives going off every damn day, it becomes difficult to be a witness against it. And you don't get much more grassrootsy than Coal River Mountain Watch. And they're walking the walk, and they're talking the talk. And they've struggled and scrounged and scrimped and saved until they've been able to put solar panels on the roof of the Judy Bond Center. God, that would have tickled Judy to pieces. It really would have. And they've got a little industrial hemp plot that they're raising as sort of a demonstration project. And nobody there's getting rich. A lot of the people that work with them are volunteers. Most everybody who works there worries about what next month's bills are. That's a far cry from yanking down a six-figure salary at one of the big greens. But there wouldn't have been that much truth-telling on Capitol Hill today had it not been for a little determined grassroots organization in Naoma, West Virginia. So that was my morning. Watching. I don't know how do you describe what those three pro coal witnesses were doing? Fuck the planet. We want to burn more coal. Fuck the planet. Fuck humanity. Fuck the other living things. Fuck it all. There's a buck in this for me. And the shareholders somewhere along the way. But they, but the other thing, the other three more or less had their hands out. Gimme, gimme, gimme. And it reminded me of how, does your memory extend far back enough to remember the Waxman-Markey climate change bill? And do you remember how the Republicans were, there's the Obama war on coal? And some jackass from Pennsylvania was blathering about it from the cheap seats there on the Republican side. Barack Obama tried to kill coal, but he wasn't successful. And there's a little bit left, and it's trying to come back now. And yet nobody seems to remember that tucked away in the Waxman-Markey bill was at least a $1 billion in coal welfare. Free money given away to the coal companies. But, you know, it was probably going to be given away by, you know, that one in the White House. And they couldn't stand the idea of being beholden to one of them. So I hope you'll understand why I shared this at the beginning of the program. I've run around to several different websites this evening. Places I go to find various news stories for the program. Not a word about that hearing. Not a peep. What's the motto over there at the Washington Post? Democracy dies in darkness. Hillbillies die in dust. Isn't that Shakespearean? Creeps each day in its petty pace unto a dusty death. Or is it dusky? I can't remember. But I'm probably, and you know, it's fitting, not that I'm an egomaniac or anything, but I have spent more time talking about mountaintop removal than any other broadcaster on Earth, and probably most of them combined. Have I had the reach to reach millions of people? No. But we've learned about it here in our community, and you have then taken the information and spread it onward. And that matters. And by the way, since this is something we're working on, I went and checked the finalized agenda for Netroots Nation. I read the titles and descriptions of every panel, every group, every training, everything. I think I found two panels that sort of marginally had something to do with environmental justice, which I find, frankly, kind of shocking given the proximity between New Orleans and Houston, where less than a year ago, vast toxic nightmare sites were exposed as a result of flooding and damage from hurricanes. We were live on air watching one chemical plant just blow the hell up and spew toxins into the air and water because, well, the people, the poor, innocent, well-meaning corporation that ran the chemical plant just had no idea that hurricanes ever hit the Texas Gulf Coast. Dang. And there are, and from the Mississippi Delta, eastward and westward, there are sacrifice zones all through there. But there's almost nothing on the agenda about environmental justice or organizing for it. And so at least there's a chance that maybe I can be down there and raise a little awareness, since there doesn't seem to be going to any awareness get raised otherwise. So it does have, you know, it does have a purpose. This, well, I've explained before, trips like this aren't vacation. They're work. I remember, a couple of years ago I was headed to D.C. Maybe it was last year. And and I actually had to explain that at the end of a day working up there, all you are is worn out. There's no time. There's no time or inclination for partying or carrying on or having a blast. It's work. And so that's what's going to be going on down there. Work. And so we'll see how we fare with fundraising, and it'll be a race, it'll be a sprint to the finish. But I can happily report that thanks to John, and thank you to Nancy, and thanks very kindly to wait a minute, I got to get the wrong one, the right one. And thanks very kindly to Gilda. We're making real progress, and we're down to $500 to go on fundraising to finish July's bill paying here. If we can do that, then we'll start working on the Beat the Sweet Challenge. Okay? A note coming in from Scott in San Diego. Mountaintop hearings is the subject line. Scott says, Bob, I don't see the first word about these hearings on the Washington Post main page online. On the other hand, I do see the scary headline, Big Dairy Coming After Your Almond Milk. What to conclude? Well, since the Post, according to Trump, only deals in fake news, the story about the many dangers of mountaintop removal coal extraction must, therefore, be real. I'll be linking the hearings on my social media with a strong invitation to all my friends to watch them, and then to contact their representatives along with whoever else can help. And remember, as we wander toward the end of this incredibly malicious, useless 115th Congress, the AIC Act is still there, and the AIC Act serves as a rallying cry for environmental justice in Appalachia. And you can always call your member of the House and your senators and tell them you want your House of Representatives member to sign on as a co-sponsor, and you want your senators to damned well introduce the AIC Act in the Senate. Because that still hasn't happened. Oops, my bad. The ad hoc horn research department, in this case comprised of Robert in Australia, says Julian McIntyre might be from South Africa. You know, there's a proximity between those two accents, but there are differences. I can't do the South African one. But he didn't sound South African, but maybe he is. I think Julian McIntyre might be from South Africa. He appears to currently be working from London, which might explain the accent. Julian founded Gateway Communications, a Pan-African telecoms company that was sold to Vodafone. I've looked around, and all I can find on him is the usual corporate-speak nonsense. I'm unable to locate a definite country of origin. Well, he sounds like he probably is South African. Or, you know, maybe he's Zimbabwean. But he was a peach. Never even dawned on him that in order to create that coal waste, you're going to have to keep mining coal. You're going to have to keep blowing those mountains up. And that burning the waste is just going to add more heat to a suffering planet. Yeah. So let's take a break. It is Tuesday, so I need to check and see if, in fact, we have a Green News report. I alerted Brad and Desi to the existence of this hearing. It wasn't on their radar either. I think Brad and Desi are off this evening, so there's that. So, that being the case, the lines are open. We've got, we have much madness to go into, without a doubt. Oodles of it, as a matter of fact. But, as always, this is Conversation Radio, and if you'd like to engage in some conversation, well, doggone it, I enjoy the heck out of that. The number, of course, is area code 304-574-8178. Or toll-free 844-843-4676. And you can always reach the program Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And we'll be chatting before you know it. So again, we'll take a little break and find out which way y'all want the program to go. Okay? Again, thank you to Gilda, and thank you to John, and thank you to Nancy for getting us down to $500 to go to finish the month of July and getting us that much closer to being able to work on the Beat the Swede Challenge. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. We're getting closer to being able to send the horn down there and hold up our little hillbilly flag for a little bit of Appalachian justice. This is listener-supported conversation radio on a Titanic Tuesday. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
They say to know the past is to know about the future, but the past gone by too fast. We become another creature pouring that poison into the air and rubbing big holes in the sky up there. But you got the power. Got the tools in hand to make it real rain. You can plant the seed and watch it grow. You can turn your back on it as if you never know. Planet Earth's call home. They say to know the past is to know about has gone by too fast. We've become another creature, tearing down mountains, leaving flat and bare, and burying streams in the valley down there. But you've got the power to change. You've got the tools in hand to make a real rain. You can plant the seed and watch it grow. Can't turn your back on it as if you never know. Planet Earth's called home. An
appropriate message, I thought, for the previous segment. Let's see. It is 9 past the hour. And let's run over and check in on the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Can you hear me well?
I hear you.
Okay. It's Dave from Indiana, Sam.
Oh, hey, Dave. How are you?
Good, brother, good. It's been a couple of Christmases since I talked to you guys.
It has been a little bit.
Well, in October last year, I got done listening to the program, and right about the time an electrical fire happened at my house, everybody got out okay, but my landlord was religious about smoke detectors. And now I'm in a good place where things are going good, and I'm just glad to be able to talk to you guys again.
Oh, we're glad to have you back in the conversation, and glad you got out okay. Damn, that's terrifying.
Yeah. Fortunately, I got out early. The smoke detectors gave me about a 2-minute warning, and I was able to get out without a problem.
But I trust you lost
so
a lot.
Anybody, not really. There were others that did, but I lost a few things. But between my landlord giving me $100 above my damage deposit to help me with the move and
that was decent.
Yeah, he's a decent guy. I mean, he wanted to rebuild, but the house was just too far gone, and they had to tear it down. But between that and the Red Cross, I was able to make ends meet pretty well and replace everything. So that worked out. So, no, I was calling about, you were talking about Coal River Mountain Watch and what they do. A few months ago, I ran across a documentary called Coal Rush. And they were featured in their distributing water to people, clean water.
Yeah, that's something Coal River Mountain Watch has done, both during the Freedom disaster and well before it, when people in Printer didn't have access to clean drinking water. We carried water to them.
Well,
we carried water to them practically every day.
Yeah, that's what this was showing. So if people want to put a face to an organization, they ought to look at that documentary, and they'll see that these people really do work hard. And subscriber on the ninth night of the month. And
well, thank you for that.
It's my way of saying thank you for, I wouldn't have been awake had I not been listening to the program, and then God only knows what would have happened.
Holy cow.
But, yeah, I mean, it happened like minutes after the program stopped. And fortunately, all I walked out in was, I was still dressed, and I walked out in my bare feet, and I didn't look back.
Well, you know what, Dave? The fact of the matter is, I get a lot of mail saying, you know, Bob, I fall asleep listening to you all the time, and I'm thinking, I don't necessarily know that that's a good thing, but for once, in your case, the program kept you up, and I'm awfully glad it did.
I'm glad it did too. I am very glad it did. But do you know the number of the house bill you were talking about earlier? Because I'm going to call Andre Carson's office tomorrow and ask remarks.
I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit.
For up to 5 minutes.
I'm sorry. Give me that again. You kind of broke up a little bit.
The bill number for the bill you were talking about.
Oh, for the ACAC?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's 686, but let me check.
Okay.
To be fair, it's been introduced enough times that it's had enough it's had enough numbers that it can kind of get lost. I mean, it was 512 once upon a time.
Then I'll concentrate on talking to.
Well, I'll have it here. Yeah, 786. It's HR 786.
786?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act.
Okay. Because I'm also going to call Joe Donnelly's office tomorrow and see that and pester him to get it introduced to the Senate. I'll even call Todd Young, but.
I understand. Look, you got to at least let them know that it's there and that they're not doing anything about it.
Right, right. And as one member of the congregation from Indiana said, they know me by name and I know him by name, son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So.
They call me Bill and I call them that useless bastard. Right, yeah.
All right, Bob, I'm going to get off here so somebody else can get on.
Well, I'm so glad you called in.
I'll talk to you later.
I'll do my best to keep you awake, but hopefully that won't happen twice.
No. I'm pretty sure that I'm okay for now. That's only the second fire I've lived through. So as long as I stay awake, third time ain't going to be the charm.
Well, here, and I'll try to do my part in it.
All right, thank you. That's all I have.
All right, take care. Have a good night. Thanks for calling.
You too, man.
Bye now.
Bye.
The stories you hear on this program, and the way that the community interacts, and what the program's meant for us all. That's a new one. And it's a good one. Given the number of people I put to sleep. But thanks for the call. Lines open if you want to get involved, 304-574-8178 or 844-843-4676. And Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. They all come into the same place, but they'll all get you here. And if somebody's on the line, just hold off and then dial again when you hear them, when you hear the conversation close. It is Titanic Tuesday, and we've got Titanic intellect to deal with. I mentioned a little something a bit ago about the Trump regime's Department of the Interior. The Washington Post had the story. It was kind of an oopsie. It was an accidental moment of truthiness on the part of the Trump regime. Earlier this month, the Department of Interior released some emails and then quickly retracted them. Those weren't supposed to. We didn't mean for you to see those. Those were the really good ones. And in those emails, the Post pointed out that these maggot members of the Trump regime were beefing and barking and pissing and moaning amongst themselves about why national monuments had to be so damn big. Yeah. Wait, you put people to sleep, says Lee? Two words, Ben Stein. Now tell me how you put people to sleep. Okay, well, look, it's just what people tell me. You know, Bob, I fall asleep listening to you. I'm like, you don't do that. You're not listening in the car, are you? Yeah, right, but no. They got caught pissing and moaning, and they also got caught turning down material that supported keeping legal safeguards in place for various monument lands. Instead, reminiscent, you remember I mentioned Richard Clark on the program last night. Remember in the immediate aftermath of September the 11th, 2001, Dim Leader said to Richard Clark, it has to be Saddam. He just had to have done it. This had to be him. Go get me some evidence that Saddam done it. And Richard Clark said, Mr. President, I'm pretty sure Saddam Hussein had nothing to do. I don't care. Look. So he comes back the next day and he says, did you bring me evidence that Saddam did it? No, there's no evidence that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with this. God damn it! Right. Well, this is similar to that. In point of fact, Trump regime officials kept asking for information that would support them deciding to shrink or remove protections entirely from national monuments. One particular instance stood out in which Ryan Shrinky Zinke wanted to shrink the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument so that it would, quote, allow sustained yield timber production. He wanted to clear cut it. And the and of course, as the Post noted, they tried to keep this from reaching the public eye. Aaron Weiss, spokesman for the advocacy group Center for Western Priorities, told the Washington Post, "The botched document dump reveals what we've suspected all along. Secretary Zinke ignored clear warnings from his own staff that shrinking national monuments would put sacred archaeological and cultural sites at risk." Well, what does Ryan Zinke care about sacred cultural and archaeological sites? There's no money in sacred archaeological and cultural sites for Ryan Zinke or any of the people who give him money or give the Republican Party money. According to the Post, the information about the moves to shrink the monuments came because of a screw-up at the FOIA office of the Department of Interior, who sent out a batch of documents to journalists and advocacy groups and then pulled back the documents because, oopsie. So that's that's the Department of Interior that we're dealing with, who crushed the quashed the review of the mountaintop removal health science. And that's what allowed the people in the hearings today to sit there and pretend that coal is just a benign net good. That we don't have to worry about poisoning anybody or killing anybody or, further torching the climate or any of that. No, heck no. Their eyes were on the dollar signs. Yes. So, look, more criminality from the Trump regime. What a surprise. But it is, it's Titanic Tuesday, so we'll be hopping and skipping around a little bit. There's lots of stuff. They're debating legalized cannabis in New Jersey. And while Titanic Tuesday is usually reserved for Titanic manifestations of right-wing intellect, the Titanic intellect involved in this story is reportedly a Democrat, a state senator by the name of Ronald Rice. I don't know, maybe Kim and Malin in New Jersey know who this is. Interviewed by NJTV this week, State Senator Ronald Rice said he believes marijuana is a gateway drug. And he said if recreational marijuana is legalized, and this is a quote, grab the hockey puck so as not to disturb the neighbors, just get it right there between your teeth, couple of loops around with the duct tape, so nobody will know you're having a conniption. Democrat State Senator Ronald Rice said, if cannabis is legalized in New Jersey, quote, the number of people who've never used any type of drugs goes up substantially in terms of drug use. If we legalize recreational marijuana right across the street from my office, they're going to put up stores. They want to call them dispensaries, but they're going to be stores that do retail, selling cupcakes with marijuana, candies with marijuana, sex toys and oils with marijuana, lipsticks with marijuana, all those kinds of products that kids can get and people can get. Because, what you always want to make sure that you make a distinction between kids and people, because quite obviously kids are not people. Mm-hmm. Marijuana lipstick, citizen. Imagine what that'll do to the poor drag queens. Yes, marijuana lipstick. There you are. You think you're just putting on an innocent coat of raspberry blush, and the next thing you know, you're just wandering around behind the little animals. My God. Imagine the sex toys with marijuana. My God, this may be the... This may be the biggest breaking story here at the Horn since sex clams down in northwest Alabama. the great Northwest Alabama sex clam debacle. Sex toys with marijuana. Anybody want to help me with that? I mean, straight community, gay community, bi community, curious community, I don't care, you know, whatever portion of the horn community. Anybody want to help me with the marijuana sex toys? I don't mean I need help with marijuana sex toys. Wait a minute. Let me rephrase that. But I mean, is it going to be a great big blow-up doll bong? I'm really, really struggling here. Because, you know, most of your sex... And the ones that buzz and vibrate and stuff, those are going to be kind of hard to hold on to as you get them up to your mouth to try to get ahead, aren't they? Sex toys with marijuana. Yeah, because their State Senator Nicholas Scutari, a Democrat, introduced cannabis legalization in the New Jersey legislature last month. And Representative Rice, or Senator Rice, is doing everything he can to make sure that people who innocently use cannabis in New Jersey remain criminals. Jesus. Yeah, no kidding. Lee in New York says, sex toy with marijuana? I think we found a politician, Bob, who does not have a sex scandal. He may even have his virginity. That gets a cowbell. Scott in San Diego notes, marijuana won't help that guy, Bob. I didn't catch the name of the guy who was ranting against recreational marijuana, but he needs to skip the weed altogether and, well, see attached. Do this. We don't need men to be gentlemen. We need men to do peyote and face their deep cores of emptiness and then return to the village humbled. True. Marijuana lipstick. Marijuana mascara. Little children's ice cream, mandrake. Marijuana concealer. Marijuana blush. My God. What if we wind up with marijuana perfume? Clarity, can you help me at all here?
New Jersey innovations. So if I move to New Jersey, I won't have to blow smoke up my ass.
Hold on.
I can innocently not be a criminal anymore. And in fact, I know the experience here in Oregon of losing your innocent criminality now that it's legal. But
it's just not as much fun as it used to be, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, you know, I could still get a ticket for, you know, smoking on my front porch. You're not supposed to, you know, do it where you're visible to the street.
Or maybe you know. Could, or if you had a car, maybe you could get a ticket for driving too slowly.
Well, you know, that's side effects. That's not a, you know, that's why they want to block the marijuanas, is because, you know, some people are more sensitive to it. And you're right, you know, the inexperienced, as he's talking about, the non-drug user, if they decide, well, it's legal now, I'm going to go try it, and, you know, their first trip, they have an out-of-body experience, you know, of course, that's really dangerous. But, you know, it says right on the packaging, do not, you know, operate machinery while using this product. So, you know, they're going against state law. Pull up some trees.
Well, but I mean, the whole gateway drug thing just drives me crazy because there's not a, you know, there's not a shred of evidence that that's the case.
No, you know, actually, now in Canada, they're saying that marijuana is a gateway drug to tobacco, that when kids can't, you know, smoke weed, they'll have a cigarette and it gets them hooked on tobacco. So that was a person who was pro, you know, legalization and stuff. And now in October, it'll be legal from coast to coast.
Okay, you want to? Would you care to help me with the
topical stuff?
The cannabis lipstick.
Well, you know they have sprays, you know, that you can spray in your mouth and it's absorbed through the mucosa. So I'm sure, you know, that lipsticks, you know, has a fatty base. That of course you could put. THC into it, but I don't.
Ooh,
you know.
And then people might kiss each other with their marijuana lips.
Oh yeah,
it's the kiss of death from Mr. Goldbud.
Okay, wait
yeah.
a minute.
Sneak, you know.
Hell of a set of pipes you got there, Clarity.
Well, thank you.
On the other hand, Ron has the entrepreneurial spirit, Clarity. Ron says, hey, maybe I'm thinking ball gags made with weed, hemp oil, lube. I got a million of them. So
yeah, well, you know, I think there's always this thing about, you know, the kids getting, you know, around some gummy bears. And, you know, thinking it's gummy bears. And, you know.
Oddly enough, the same people who get upset about the idea of kids getting around some cannabis gummy bears are usually the same people who jealously defend the right of Emery and Marveline to keep a loaded pistol in the drawer where the youngins can get it when the grandkids come to visit.
Well,
that there's a constitutional right involving
yeah,
some
that's,
freedom.
That's our right to live in peril. Constant peril. That's our patriot duty. That's why we get a scaled down model for little Patty Sue so that, you know, she can you know, get used to using a silencer and a sight, you know, before she starts school. She'll have to start doing open carry kindergarten.
Well, Sparky has told me there's absolutely nothing like that going on at his local retailer. No marijuana lipstick, no marijuana sex toys. No.
You know, and back to what I was talking about, the gummy bears. And I think I told you the story about my mom accidentally ate one of my brownies.
No.
Oh, yeah. One night she had, you know, wanted to eat something, you know, sweet before she went to bed. And I had some medical brownies in the freezer. And she pulled one out and ate a whole one.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And she said about the time I laid down, the room started going
breathing.
Back and forth. Like I was on a boat. And she said, I spent the whole night clutching the pillow top on her bed. And I was debating, you know, whether I should, you know, ring the cowbell and wake you up. Because, you know, it's already inside my body. And if he takes me to the emergency room, you know, I don't want to go there.
Poor Clarity's mom. But that's another thing. And it's a benefit of legalization. Eventually we'll get some sort of standardization in the amounts that go into these edibles. Because there's no,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
you and I have a different, you and I have a different cannabis experience being from a different generation. There's a far cry between Mexican ditchweed and the stuff that's out there now.
Absolutely. And, you know, some people, you know, they get, there's a contact high they get from it. And, you know, they get a pretty good buzz on just some medium grade stuff. And they never feel the need for spending the extra $4 or $5 a gram for the top shelf buds. You know, it's there's a little bit of snobbery, just like wine, you know, in the marijuana couture.
Oh, you mean there are people who sit around saying this has a lovely bouquet and it reminds me of brandied cherries and old baseball gloves.
Yes, yes. And this one has a musky, dusky, skunky playfulness. Yes, playfulness, and it melts my middle third eye quite well. My hat's off to the growers in Montana, you know.
Third week of May was a very good week.
Yeah. Amen. But, you know, this hysteria, I don't know, you remember, like, God, it was maybe 20 years ago. No, 15 years ago. They had the Kush something, you know, they promoted this thing that this guy in, I think he was in Michigan, in the house, that anybody that was busted growing, selling, transporting the variety of Kush, because it's quote unquote Hindu Kush, which in Afghanistan, you know, it's used by the Taliban. So if you're buying that, and they were saying, you know, there's all these terrorists that live in Canada growing it in, you know, the suburbs of Toronto, and they're flooding the market here. And he says, you can see it going street by street and, you know, taking our children's minds. Anyway, if you Google HR, or, you know, House of Representatives, Hindu Kush bill, you probably get the video come up on YouTube.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
But it's, you know, they just made it, you know, then that's the thing. They keep, it's just a different variation on assassin.
Where do these neo-maxi zoom dweebies think cannabis indica came from? Tijuana? Jesus, God. We know what this New Jersey state senator is worried about, but Ron's got me thinking. Cannabis edible panties.
why put something that doesn't need to be there?
Well, I mean, one person's need is another person's necessity.
Well, I'm just speaking from experience. None of them were that tasty.
Well, no.
I tried all the flavors.
Yeah, right. Strawberry, you know, the licorice ones, just no. No, just no.
No.
And you know what? No. The edible panties flavored with whorehound, that never took off either.
Wait a minute.
Clarity's running after her own cowbell.
She's out on the porch.
Oh.
But anyway, I went to the, this was the other thing I wanted to share with you, was that I went to the, around to the booths, you know, walked through the fair, you know, and they always have different things, you know, artists and taxidermy and, you know, and then the search and rescue and the Forest Service, you know, they each got a little booth. Well, they had Newt Bueller, who's the Republican candidate for Oregon governor, and Walden's booth, you know, big red Republican booth. And I thought it was really ironic that the booth right next to them was green cement. We are, you know, proponents of the cleanest and greenest cement there is. And just about 30 miles east of there, there's a plant that makes concrete lime stuff, and they put tons of mercury into the environment. And Walden said, you know, that's too much regulation. They have to, you know, reduce their emissions. It's 200 jobs. I think we've talked about this.
Yeah, I got to have some jobs. Even if we poison people in the process, or jobs.
I thought it was really ironic that the green concrete booth was right next to the Republican booth there.
That's a classic case of greenwashing.
Yes.
But you sort of meander over into another topic, and that is that I saw this weekend that there's a recall. No shit. There's a recall on Ritz crackers, Ritz bits. You know, the little peanut butter crackers with the Ritz. It's two Ritz crackers with some peanut butter in the middle.
Oh, I hope they're not going to make them go unleaded.
Well, no, they've just got they've got a little too much salmonella in them. Because I mean, this is the logical absurd outcome of the ridiculous the ridiculous mania for deregulating everything.
Well, if you put the spray, you know, the stuff that comes out of a can cheese on there, it's got enough growth retardant in it that I think it, you know, it kind of counteracts the salmonella.
Jesus. But, I mean, peanut butter and crackers. Corporate America cannot make a peanut butter and cracker without making people sick, Clarity.
Oh, yeah, from the rancid peanuts? Yeah.
No, from the salmonella.
Sent out way too many rancid peanuts. Remember United Peanuts or Peanuts US?
Yeah. Yep.
And then we...
I mean, it just sort of... Pretty soon we're going to... Well, no, they've already gotten the water. I was going to say pretty soon we're going to find out that... That they can't,
they can. They thought they can.
And by the way, another interesting science link that came out recently. If you look on, and I realize you don't eat meat, so it's not a problem for you. Years and years and years, nitrates and nitrites were all over all kinds of preserved meats. Well, now,
I can't. That's...
now you're beginning to see nitrite-free hot dogs, things like that. And lo and behold, a study came out showing that there's a pretty solid link between nitrates and... the manic episodes for people who have bipolar disorder.
That's what got me in trouble. Okay. God damn. I had no idea those rainbow meats were what's making me loopy.
Yeah, now we find out. Yeah. But they observed it. They observed it associationally. The scientists did, and then they said, well, okay, maybe, association is not causation. So then they gave nitrates to rats, and the rats got manic.
Yeah, well, it's a reagent. I would think, yeah, it would speed up the firing rate, you know, because it opens up sodium channels. So, yeah, it makes sense.
But, you know, beef jerky, hot dogs, ham, bacon.
Well, you saw the thing about over barbecued meats are not good for you. You know, charred like Trump eats, you know.
Yeah, cooked down to shoe leather, right.
Yeah, well, and carbon, you know, getting down to base elements.
The ideas just keep coming, by the way. Ron in Raleigh points out, hey, remember, they've got bacon-flavored lube. Add a little hemp to that, and you can kill two birds with one stone. Munchies are a thing of the past. that gets one. I'm still terribly proud of the whorehound line, though. I just am.
Well, when I used to do dairy products before I learned why I was, figured out why I was having bronchitis four or five times a year, I would, before I go to work, I'd take about half a gram of bud and saute it, and then mix it up with a little Häagen-Dazs and head off to wait tables.
Wowzer.
Yeah. Well, to me, it was a good working drug. You know, some people, they can't, you know, they get too spacey or they want to lay down and go to sleep. But I like to eat it.
Well, and I recently realized that Häagen-Dazs has cleaned up their act. At least the Häagen-Dazs vanilla is nothing but cream, sugar, milk, vanilla, and that's it.
Oh, I learned something yesterday.
Yes.
My medical driver used to work for one of the dairies here, and he says that they use Guernseys for cheese, and they use Holsteins for ice cream, and that Holsteins produce a lot more milk, but it's really low, a lot lower in butter fat. So it's more of a drinking milk, and the Guernsey's more for, you know, making cheese, stuff like that.
I had no idea.
It is breed specific.
So your wildly expensive Tillamook cheddar is probably made from Guernsey milk.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, they segregate the herds.
I'll be dipped.
We have a new organic dairy in the county, 3,500 head.
Whoa.
And they don't use carousels. Out at the corporate farms, they have these carousels. They walk the cows in, and by the time they get to the other side of the carousel, they're done milking, and they just walk out the other side. It's all, you know.
So with the organic dairies, they get to just actually stand there and get milked?
I'm not sure how they do it. I can't even imagine milking 3,500 cows twice a day by hand.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so. Well, they get a good price for their product, you know, wherever they sell it. But we'll see. It's just started up in the last year. So, yeah, interesting stuff happening here.
Very, very much so. Now, the last time we talked, we're getting nearer and nearer and nearer the completion of your corrective process. Where do you stand with that?
Well, I have a surgery date now. It's March of 2019, and then I'll have about 5 weeks to 3 months of recovery time. And then I'll be fully functioning, yeah, the other way.
Wow.
Yeah, but I still got a lot of brush to clear.
delightfully, obtusely, euphemistically put.
Yeah, I think I tried to do it that way last time as well. Yeah, I'm a tricolor, just like Toto.
Well, I squirm at the mere mention of it, so I imagine there are a lot of people who are.
It's not something you do for shits and giggles, that's for sure. My sessions run about 50 minutes, and she usually does about between 180 and 225, 100, 230. So, yeah, they're going
But that's, you know, really not that much space when you get right down to it.
Oh, no, and the crevices are where the nerves run, too. So, yeah, I can be, I practice my Zen stuff out of, you know, I am not the body.
No, and, you know, I think I'd be practicing my brownie while I was at it, but, you know. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'd be practicing my brownie or my gummy bears or, you know, something. Yeah.
Oh, I got you. Yeah, well, I carry my vape pen, and it's such a low volume that people don't even, you know, notice it. So that's a good thing. Yeah.
Honestly, I've never gotten a tattoo. That's why, and because, you know, everybody who's ever gotten one says, "Hey, Bob, you know, it hurts." I'm like, well, that's good. I'll trust you.
Well, I don't know. I guess if you.
But in your situation, right, you got to.
Well, yeah, I got to go through the process. But as far as tattoos go, the estrogen changed my skin, and I think it would just, you know, I'd be all bruised up. It wouldn't look good.
But probably make you hoot like a barn owl too.
I'm working on the high range.
Oh, I mentioned Tillamook, and there's Sparky. Man, I love my Tillamook cheese.
Yeah, did I tell you it's owned by a Korean conglomerate?
No.
Yeah, it's not. It's only like 25% American owned.
Well, Maker's Mark's owned by Suntory brand, so why not?
Sure. Well, but I don't want Marlboro growing my marijuana. You know, it should be grown by small operations. They're saying the Canadian plan is to, you know, have just massive corporate growing areas, you know, just like square miles of plants. So we'll see how it turns out. But that, you know, and then there's the ones that are saying we're holding out for artisan, a niche, you know, like the microbrews versus Budweiser, you know,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Oh, very well played, Budweiser. I see what you did there, Clarity.
Oh, well, it's the sign of a free mind, a mind that's been set free.
A third eye that's been squeegeed clean. Clarity, it's wonderful to hear from you. I hope you have a lovely evening.
Listen, I was glad to share, and it just makes me sick, you know, to know how much we're losing as far as, you know, the cleanliness and the nature. We need those places, even if we don't go there. Even if we don't know the intimacy with the animals and everything else, we need those places, and we definitely don't need our national monuments micro-sized.
Well, so. No, they don't need to be, and the people who live downwind of it don't need the blasting dust blown toward them from blowing up these magnificent places. And you're right. What you said, you know, that's profound. We need them even if we don't go there.
Yeah.
We need to know they're there.
And we, you know, we have our issues with lung disease here, you know, in the Palouse, because we have that really fine silica dust that blows all the time, and you're breathing it. And it adds up over time, you know. So anyway, you keep up the good work, and I'll be thinking of you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Clarity. You take care. And I don't know if you come up with any ideas for remember, Senator Rice in New Jersey don't want to hear about it.
A novel used to get the children to be coaxed into a life of innocent crime.
Yeah, there we go. Exactly. Clarity, have a lovely evening.
You too, brother.
Bye now. The one and only Clarity calling from the far corners of eastern Oregon. A couple of notes coming in. Subject line, funny, from Flavio. Ella's Deli in Madison, Wisconsin, finally closed. The owner's having retired. but they had a really bad rep for a lack of cleanliness. People started calling it Salmonella's Deli because of all the health code citations. True story. Yeah, meanwhile, Lee in New York with an observation, marijuana stores, location, location, location. If the New Jersey politician's office is near the marijuana market, people will get high and all sort of, like, you know, protest. But of course, because he was a prophet, he was on top of this a long time before a lot of people were even thinking, let alone talking about it. Let's look back to those heady days of yesteryear and the prophet Bill Hicks. Peace be upon him. Oh, wrong button. Works better if you use the right button. Here we go.
I don't do drugs. I want to thank management for offering. But I said no. When I say no, it means how much and can I get some more? No, it means no. I mean that, unless you're giving it away. No, it means no. And can I also get some leads to come down later? No, it means, seriously, it means no. Is the bar open? Oh, okay, no, it means, let's see how I... No, I used to do drugs. I had no luck with drugs, man. One time, me and three friends dropped acid, drove around in my dad's car. He has one of those talking cars. We're tripping, and the car goes, the door is ajar. We pulled over and thought about that for 12 hours, man. Shit, how can a door be ajar? Oh, shit, why would they put a jar on a car? Oh, shit, the freeway's melting. Put it in the jar. This went on for hours. But if it's a jar... But what kind of car? I'm tired. Yeah. Got pulled over tripping once. Woo! There's a dream come true. I'll match that to any drunk story you got. Pulled over tripping. Jesus. Cop was tapping on this window. We're staring at him in this mirror over here. Big one and a little one. Twins. Oh, shit. Be cool. I don't do drugs. I got nothing against drugs. I got nothing against drugs. I think it's a personal choice. Just like alcohol, just like cigarettes. As long as that personal choice does not infringe upon the freedoms of another person's personal choice. Really, that's the end of the story. That's called logic. It'll help you. George Bush says, we are losing the war on drugs. Well, you know what that implies? There's a war going on, and people on drugs are winning it. Ah! Well, what does that tell you about drugs? Some smart, creative motherfuckers on that side. They're winning a war and they're fucked up.
Ah, peace be upon him, the prophet Bill Hicks. Then there are the people who are apparently on the hard stuff, the bad stuff, the horse tranquilizer, the stuff that doesn't need to be legal. Like, oh, I don't know, Alex Jones. Are you aware of the fact that Alex Jones in the last day or so, and this isn't about giving Alex Jones free publicity, this is about talking about where we are as a nation right now. Alex Jones suggested, and this is not a joke, and he wasn't kidding. It happened yesterday. And if something, if somebody like our good friend Malloy, or I, or anybody else said something like this, there would be an immediate shit hemorrhage. Left-wing talker urges violence. Let me see if we've got the audio here.
Talking with the office.
No.
Have yet to be publicly
identified. No. Oh, well. Oh, okay. I think, yeah, here we go. Sometimes it takes a minute to find this stuff. It's no biggie, because I-O-K-I-Y-A-M. It's okay if you're a maggot. Here we go. Go away. Hush. Be quiet. There. All right.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, once it's Mueller, everyone's so scared of Mueller, they'd let Mueller rape kids in front of people, which he did. I mean, Mueller covered up for a decade for Epstein, kidnapping kids, flying them on sex planes, some kids as young as 7 years old, reportedly, with big perverts raping them to frame people. I mean, Mueller is a monster, man. God, imagine. He's even above the pedophiles, though. The word is he doesn't have sex with the kids. He just controls it all. Can you imagine being a monster like that? God.
Now, that's just one paragraph of a two-paragraph rant. And we have some rather loosely defined libel laws in this country, or perhaps narrowly, depending on how one looks at it. But because of rulings like New York Times versus Sullivan and Falwell v. Hustler, if you're a public figure, whether you're trying to be or not, the law of this country says that anybody can pretty much say anything about you that they want to and get away with it. So you just heard, in the space of 33 seconds, Alex Jones allege that Robert Mueller, whose entire life has pretty much been starched out and buttoned down and squared away, Alex Jones just makes shit up. And he doesn't have to put forward any proof. And so he gets away with it. The allegation that he was the one behind the pedophilia ring that Jeffrey Epstein... right. Not a shred of evidence. Nothing. Here's the rest of it, though.
God, people say, well, God, aren't you scared of him? I'm scared of not manning up.
He's been drinking too much of that chocolate chicken bone paleo malt beverage.
I'm constantly in fear that I'm not being a real man and I'm not doing what it takes and I'm not telling the truth. And so call it whatever you want. I look at that guy and he's a sack of crap. That's a demon I will take down or I'll die trying. So that's it. going to happen. We're going to walk out in the square politically at high noon, and he's going to find out when he makes a move, man. Make the move first, and then it's going to happen. It's not a joke. It's not a game. It's the real world. Politically, you're going to get it, or I'm going to die trying, bitch. Get ready. We're going to bang heads. We're going to bang heads.
Now, because it's video, what you don't see is him drawing his imaginary finger pistol and pointing it at imaginary Robert Mueller. And he throws in the word politically so that he can say that, no, he didn't actually threaten a government official, an official of the Department of Justice. Because there are federal laws that make that criminal conduct. But then again, Ted Nugent threatened to shoot Barack Obama. Ted Nugent threatened to murder or at least sodomize Hillary Clinton with the muzzle of a firearm. Nothing ever happened to him. Nothing ever happens to any of them. Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-M. It's okay if you're a maggot. And the people that tune into that mad bullshit, they lap it up like kitties lapping up cream. Dear God. And see, Alex Jones doesn't have to do his own dirty work. Because the way this works is, instead, Alex Jones knows that a significant number of his audience, for lack of a better term, are not mentally well. He also knows they have a whole lot of firearms. So just as Bill O'Reilly said, Tiller the killer, Tiller the killer, Tiller the killer, until one of his audience went out and murdered Dr. Tiller in cold blood, so too Alex Jones knows all he has to do is spout this hateful drivel until one of his residents of Bedlam goes out and tries to perform a Second Amendment remedy on Robert S. Mueller III. Interesting times? No. Dangerous times. Yes. So, you know, kind of be paying attention. Because they have a homicidal streak, these patriots. Clarence says, subject line, pure coward blowhard. Bob, I'd love to see Jones go toe-to-toe with Mueller. My money's on the Marine Combat Infantry platoon leader. I know. I'm guessing even at 73, he could probably take him. Paranoid white males trying to get some other paranoid white male to go and commit murder. breathtaking. Hey, 12 minutes past the hour, and huge thanks going out this evening to our buddy John, trying to help us to get to Radio Row. John has put a challenge on the table, a $200 challenge, which would take us down, if met, to $100 to go to finish July and work on the remainder of what it's going to take to get to Netroots Nation. Thank you, John. $200 challenge on the table. Your 10 bucks becomes 20. Your 5 becomes 10. But John has put that on the table in the hopes that we can knock down a whole bunch of this. Get closer and closer and closer. Thank you, John. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. What else? Ever so much more. By now, I'm sure you've heard the story of the paralyzing fear of Georgia State Representative Jason Spencer, who lost his primaries on his way out of the legislature. But Sacha Baron Cohen got him to drop trowel in the name of, wait for it, defeating terrorism. Because nothing makes a member of ISIS run the other way faster than being mooned by a pasty-faced, doughy, well, it's not his doughy face that really matters in this, is it? White guy. Yeah. And then Jason Spencer said that Sacha Baron Cohen had preyed on his fears of being killed in a terrorist attack to trick him into dropping his pants as part of a self-defense class. Writing to Steve Zaitchik of the Washington Post, Jason Spencer said, "In 2017, I received countless death threats in connection with my introduction to legislation involving the wearing of masks. The threats escalated to the point that my wife received threatening phone calls concerning her and my children. Sacha Baron Cohen and his associates took advantage of my paralyzing fear that my family would be attacked." The only problem was he was not too paralyzed to drop his pants on camera. "As uncomfortable as I was to participate, I agreed to understanding that these techniques were meant to help me and others fend off what I believed was an inevitable attack. My fears were so heightened at that time, I was not thinking clearly, nor could I appreciate what I was agreeing to when I participated in his class." But, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen got him to do it because he said that he was an Israeli counterterrorism expert. And again, like kittens to cream, a Republican will run to anything that has Israeli written on it. And so down came the trousers and out waved the butt. Well, here's the best part. Good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Republican, Christian that he is, Jason Spencer, was called upon by, the governor of the state of Georgia to resign. I mean, he's not coming back anyway. He was called on to resign. And Jason Spencer, last I checked, has refused to resign. As Will in Chicago points out, I'm sure he blames Cohen for tricking him or using slurs against Asians and African Americans. Yeah. Meanwhile, note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Rhetorical question, I know, but shouldn't the FBI be paying a visit to that MF-er Alex Jones, just like the Secret Service paid comedian Kathy Griffin a visit for the severed Trump head gag? Yeah, the gag that did not even vaguely resemble anybody's head. Yeah, says Darlene, I think they damned well should. And I agree. Here's the trick. If they do, they know that Alex Jones will then get on air and launch himself right up onto the cross, and with the mere force of his bloviating mouth, blow the nails into his own palms and feet as he nails himself right in on the cross. The deep state has threatened me. The deep state is trying to shut me down. Me, Alex Jones, the only man on earth that'll tell you the truth. God damn, he sounds like a grown-up Cartman with a frog in his throat. What a jackass. But yeah, the Secret Service should pay him a visit. Just like the Secret Service should have paid Ted Nugent repeated visits. Marching around on stage with semi-automatic assault rifles and threatening to shoot Barack Obama and or Hillary Clinton and or sodomize Hillary Clinton with the said muzzle of the said assault rifle. I-O-K-I-Y-A-M. Yeah. Of course. Oh, and we probably need to deal with this news today. Julius Geezer started himself a trade war, and now it's having a rather significant impact on maggot farmers. So guess what? To the tune of $12 billion of our money, Geezer Disgustus is going to try to buy farmers' votes by bailing them out and paying them for stuff that they can't sell overseas because of the tariffs that he imposed. The trade war that he started. Are we clear? But the goddess of irony doesn't let this kind of stuff slide. And she was right there, even as they were thinking about doing this, because they had to come up with a way to get around Congress and not ask Congress to appropriate any money. So what did they do? Because Congress doesn't like this idea at all. It's Republicans. And they would just as soon let their own constituents starve, John Hagee, as, you know, bail them out. And of course, this has absolutely nothing to do with that sacred, holy, untouchable, free market capitalism of which they're so fond until they're not. Socialism, if you will. So they reached into the dim mists of time, and they found an FDR program. Yes, that FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, from the Depression. A program that was a mechanism that was created, still existed, and could be used to pay off farmers for crop losses. And Donald J. Trump's regime is actually going to use an FDR program to bail farmers out from a trade war that miserable fucker started. It was announced this afternoon, after earlier in the morning, Marcus Aurelius declared, tariffs are great. Tariffs are the greatest. And the Commodity Credit Corp will administer the buyouts and the welfare payments. I wish I was kidding. I'm not. The USDA will be the primary delivery vehicle. There will be direct payments to producers of soybeans and the like. There will be distribution help for food that can be easily given to food banks, fruits, nuts, rice, beans, a few meats. Yeah. But, you know, that's farmers. What's he going to do to bail out, oh, I don't know, fishermen? What's he going to do to bail out companies that rely on tariffed steel? Yeah. Casey Guernsey is a spokesman. Hey, that's the second mention of Guernsey in the program tonight. Is a spokesperson for Americans for Farmers and Families. Casey Guernsey said it can't be maintained in the long run. You only have so many calves that are born every year, and there's only one time to harvest a crop, so you really have to make the best decision you can on any given day for the upcoming year. We don't want to pin our hopes on a check from the government every month. Nah, but if the check comes, you'll cash it, won't you? Of course you will. And then come November, you'll go and vote for some maggot Republican for House and Senate. And come 2020, you'll go and you'll vote for some maggot for House and some maggot for Senate. And vote for some, well, vote for Julius Geezer for a second term. The American Soybean Association issued a statement. They said, while soybean growers appreciate the administration's recognition that tariffs have caused reduced exports and lower prices, the announced plan provides only short-term assistance. ASA continues to call for a longer-term strategy to alleviate mounting soybean surpluses and continued low prices, including a plan to remove the harmful tariffs. Now, some Republicans were not thrilled when Trump tweeted, tariffs are the greatest. The fuck does that even mean, goddamned idiot? But, of course, their courage extends only so far as a statement or so, not to screwing their courage to the sticking place and saying, hey, that's fine. You wanna crush... You want to crush farmers and fishermen and ranchers and all manner of American business and industry? Cool. You don't get Brett Kavanaugh. Yeah. But your Rand Pauls and your Pat Toomeys and your Bob Corkers and your Jeff Flakes, they don't have that kind of guts. Because in the long run, most of the stuff that Trump's doing is stuff that they absolutely love. Hey, thanks very kindly to need to check. Thanks very kindly to Clarence for answering a portion of John's challenge. We got $180 to go in that now. Thank you, Clarence. Thank you very much. Let's run over and check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I don't normally call twice in a row, but I wanted to go over a couple of quick things. The first thing is a technical question. I was listening to the replay of the show last. A fair amount of crackling, like static, during my call.
Yeah, that was, no offense, that was you.
Okay, I didn't hear it during the course of speaking with you on my end.
I heard it.
I didn't apparently hear you mention it, or apparently didn't hear you mention it during the course of the call, which you did once. So I apologize for that.
Oh, no worries. Don't beat yourself up. I mean, so far, so good. No crackle.
Okay. I think it's the headphone jack or the headphone plug wasn't firmly seated in the jack. And speaking of putting things into other things,
we're going back there, aren't we?
Yeah, I got one more comment about the guy up in New Jersey who's fixated on recreational marijuana. And, you know, here's what I tell him. marijuana-infused vibrators be damned. They'll take my 12-inch Daedalo purple vibrator that whirs, spins, buzzes, and sings comedy tonight when they pry it out of my cold, dead butt. So there. I said it, and I'm fiercely proud. Anyway.
Yeah, and I promise not to clue up.
There's comedy tonight. Anyway.
And I promise not to cue up John Fox's inimitable rendition of my lyric, Send Me a Dildo from Montgomery.
Mercy. Yes, it's official, boys and girls. The heat has finally gotten to poor Scotty's brain.
Well, it's also official. We ran the program into the gutter a little while back, and well, there's no climbing out when you get there.
Anyway, okay, I wanted to clear up one quick thing about the show yesterday, and then I have a quick question about the mountaintop removal stuff on the hill today. I want to make it abundantly clear to you and to Mark and to whoever may have wondered. I think one or both of you were talking about the possibility of Men in Black type folks being responsible for being the agents in government who are doing stuff to keep us on an even keel. I never went there, and I mean, some of my shit is far fetched, but even I don't believe that.
Well, no, I mean, I was using that as a general sort of model for I understood. As it turns out, I did see a follow up story, and that is that we may have actually there's a possibility we may have whatever the Russians have because we may have intercepted it.
Oh, good.
You know, SIGINT, surveillance.
Signal. Yeah,
yeah,
I used
signals,
to know that
signals intelligence.
Acronym. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I figured somebody was listening or watching or both.
But if that's the case, you sure hope that they've transmitted the PP tape a couple of times, because that means somebody else has that, too.
Yeah. Now, I wasn't intending on going into the PP tape, but it's a hot day, so what the hell, we'll cool off. What was the time frame again that supposedly occurred?
14, 15-ish.
Okay.
Right. Roughly the time of the Miss Universe pageant in Moscow.
Okay. Well, you were when we were discussing that hot and heavy not long ago. I didn't send it in an email and I didn't call in to share it, but it's worth pointing out now a notion that crossed my mind during the PP tape and its ultimate release. Just let it go. Its release. it's possible that the visual contents of the PP tape aren't the indicting thing. All right, if I understand the scenario, there were Russian hookers on the bed in the presidential suite, on the bed that Barack and Michelle presumably slept upon, and they were peeing all over it, and Trump was watching. Is that pretty much an accurate
sense? That's the way it's described, yes.
All right. Let's suppose for a moment that the visual aspects of what went on are not the indictable thing. That's not where the outrage should be, as horrible as that is, and as telling as that is about Trump's personality and or Russia, Putin's influence over Trump. Let's wonder, let's speculate, what if Trump was cheering them on throughout the spectacle by saying, that's it, pee all over that N-word's bed, and was just dropping the N-word bomb right, left,
well,
and center.
Well, given that it would have been 2013, I'm sorry, I misspoke, but given that it was 2013, that would have been par for the course because he was smack dab in the middle of all of his birther stuff. And
uh-huh.
And of course, there's also the running rumor that the outtakes of The Apprentice have him using that word all over the place.
Well, see, that's what caused me to wonder it in the context of the PP tape. I know sometimes my mind goes to far flung sectors of the galaxy, but given what what we now wait a minute, given what we now know about Trump and his manner of being and showing up in the world, nothing would surprise me about this guy. I dare say we've only seen the tip of the iceberg in terms of his.
Well, I still say that there's a substantial likelihood that they all look like Ivanka, and they're probably all children.
Of course. Of course.
Something like child exploitation, what? That's going to be the one thing that turns Vladimir Putin's stomach, really?
No, it's like I say with this guy, if you're in for a penny, you may as well be in for a pound. Because nothing is beyond the pale in terms of reprehensible behavior when it comes to Trump or Putin or both, along with the many, many apologists and enablers of Trump in our sectors of government. It's shameful, and it's telling, and it's reprehensible. And we need to address it come November. We need to speak loudly and clearly with one voice come November of 2018 and say enough. And I mean, people, if you do nothing else with your time and your energy, get registered and invite your friends and relatives to get registered.
Unless they're maggots.
And verify, unless they're maggots. And let the world know that the people of this country, the good folk of this country, have not lost their fucking minds. At long last, let them know in the world and beyond that we do have some sense of decency, and that things are that we will correct things of this sort when they tragically occur. But anyway,
it's all we got, Scott. It's all we got.
I know.
I mean, we've also got going to D.C. to the tune of about 3 million people, and or 5 or 10, and just investing D.C. peacefully and legally and not leaving until they do. There's that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be an extra constitutional remedy. The thing that we've got to keep in the back of it, well, no, not in the back, but in the forefronts of our minds, Scott, is that we would like to still have a constitution when this nightmare fucking ends.
Well, it'd be nice. I mean, it would have to be something to build upon.
Because I don't like the idea of living in a military dictatorship, and I don't like the idea of the military having to take out a president, and I don't like the idea. No. I have no compunction against a president being indicted because I think that was fully within the purview of the contemplations of the framers of the Constitution. The 25th Amendment doesn't bother me, and neither does impeachment, except that it takes for fucking ever. But apart from that, voting is, you know, what we've got. But we also need,
we need to contact our representatives and our senators on a regular basis on issues of the day that are before them for contemplation and consideration, and to always, always, always keep it brief, stay on point, and by all means remind them of two things. We are paying attention, and we will be voting this November and in future Novembers in case they are not in the current electoral cycle. That I can't tell you what value those steps have, because they don't want a harangue, they don't want a speech, they don't want a bunch of name calling. They want you to be straight to the point and with cogent bullet points, if you will, and to let them know that we appreciate when they do their work appropriately, but we are watching against that day when they're sloughing off or giving us a bunch of jive, you know? And that's important. And, you know, voting isn't all there is to it. As important as voting is, we've got to ride herd on these people because, in a way, some of them are like children, even the good guys and the good ladies. You have to be constant and vigilant and let them know that you are keeping track of how things are proceeding, and you will take that into account when it comes time to re-up them for another 2 or 4 or 6 years. It's like a job. Well, it is a job. It's an important job. And we're the bosses in that scenario.
Well, that's the way Franklin described it. Somewhere,
yeah.
And Franklin. There's so many Franklin apocryphal stories, but there's one that says that Franklin suggested that a member of the Congress should be happy to go home and not be a member, an elected member anymore, because that meant that they were no longer a servant of the people and had gone back to being one of the bosses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, I got off kind of on a rant there. About the mountaintop removal video, I saw it. I didn't play it yet, but I saw the link on your Facebook. But in looking at the official C-SPAN printable schedule that I look at, you know, to find out what's on C-SPAN, I don't see any mention
of it. It ain't there.
Where is... Did they cover it with
no,
video today?
No. The dead hillbillies aren't worth it. A slow-rolling genocide in Appalachia is not worth C-SPAN's time because we need to make time for Mary to call in from North Carolina and talk about how she tolerated Barack Obama for 8 years. Eight
well,
long Negroid years.
you may have, wait a minute. You may have mentioned this early in the show. I missed the first 40 minutes or so. So there's, if I go to the main C-SPAN website.
No, you're never going to see it.
I will. I'll be damned. Well, who did the video today?
You have to go. You have to go to naturalresources.house.gov.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be on C-SPAN. I tweeted it was going to be on C-SPAN. Then I had to.
Yeah, I remember.
Then I had to respond to my own tweet and say, no, it's here.
Well, the, Vernon, what's his last
Haltom.
Name?
Haltom, which, by the way, Dr. Body Language couldn't get right.
I'll tell you, I what I've seen and heard of his presentation, quite eloquent. I was going to say elegant, too, but quite eloquent. And moving was his presentation, so much of it as I've heard so far. Well, I'll find and post as much of it as I can with my friends and explain to them that I know there's a lot of stuff to keep track of.
Well, I mean, it would be very helpful if you just go over and among other things, share the two clips that I've already got up on Facebook.
Okay. All right, well, I'll look for those and do that. Because it's so easy for stuff to fall through the cracks. And I'll be honest, before I started listening to the program a year and a half, 2 years, whatever it's been now, I was ignorant of this. I mean, I had some sense of the switchover from going down, working in the coal mine, going down method.
Oh, Lord, I am so tired. Yes, how long can this go? Working in the coal mine.
Yeah. Going down, working. Well, who sang that damn song? Now I've got that in my head.
Well, yeah, the version I first became familiar with was the Devo cover, but that's not where it started.
Well, there was one in the 60s that used to get pretty frequent airplay.
I'm pretty sure that's the one.
All right. But anyway, my point being, I was, other than a vague understanding that they were switching from that form of extraction, labor-intensive form, to the mountaintop removal, I had a vague understanding that had been going on or was supposed to be going on. But it wasn't until I started listening to the program that I really got a strong dose of reality about not only what they're doing, but what it is doing to the water, to the air, and most importantly, to the human beings and even animals, I imagine, who are affected so badly by this.
No, it creates moonscapes. They have to seed it with seed it with non-native grasses because the stuff that grows here won't grow there. And by the way, courtesy of Ron and Raleigh, Lee Dorsey did Working in the Coal Mine. And yeah, it was written. It was written by Alan Toussaint.
Oh yeah, there you go. Two great names.
1966.
Wow. That would have been the time, the mid 60s, on AM 1390, Weem.
Well, I learned about it because I'm a little younger than you, watching the magnificent animated rock and roll film Heavy Metal, and Devo covered it.
Yeah. But as if the mountaintop removal and the damage that it causes weren't bad enough, the coal companies understand what they're doing.
Yeah, just like the tobacco companies knew.
Yeah, and the politicians who take the money and shield their eyes and attention, they know what's going on. The people to whom it's happening certainly know what the hell's going
on. Actually, if I may interrupt you there, of all the people who don't know what's going on, the people it's happening to probably are the least likely to know what's killing them. That's fact.
But they know they're being killed. They know they can't fucking
breathe. Well, they know that Papaw gets the cancer or that Mama has to go to the hospital and didn't come back. Yeah, they know that shit. But there are so many things that happen as a result of it, Scott. And this is where the coal company gets away with murder. You're never going to get a doctor say, I'm sorry, your thyroid's got to come out because you've been poisoned by coal dust. Okay? Or you've been poisoned by particulates, not coal dust, but you've been poisoned by particulates off a mountaintop removal site. Doctor's never going to say that. An oncologist is never going to say that. A surgeon's never going to say that. And so in a place like West Virginia, people tend to just go, well, God's will. When it's not God's will, it's the coal it's the coal company's will. God damn it.
Yeah.
And the bottom line to all of this is that and you need to understand this about, if you understand nothing about the coal industry. The coal industry has known since there began to be a coal industry that there was no way to extract coal without killing a whole lot of people. Okay? As far back as the early 20th century, the coal industry knew about black lung. And they did everything they could to suppress any knowledge of it. And if a doctor dared to ask a question about it, that doctor didn't work in the coal camp anymore. I mean, it's dirty, dirty business.
If you were listening carefully, you may have heard the little bell go off inside of my head, because when you mentioned the tobacco industry, and this is worth pointing out to the listeners, there a couple of years ago, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, I read a book, and that thing must have been 2.5-3 inches thick, hardback book, called Golden Holocaust by, I believe it was Dr. Robert N. Proctor. And this book, I'm telling you, I've read it twice. I was so impressed with it. It is an exhaustive, detailed, very easily approachable volume on the history of tobacco in this country, pipes, chewing tobacco, cigarettes, cigars, and the industry that produced it and the politicians who protected them for so many years. And it is by far the best book on the topic. It goes into the medical history, the advertising history, the cultural aspects, the economic aspects, the nature of the plant, the history of the plant, the nature and history of the politicians and the regions from which they hail. I mean, it covers it from A to Z, from soup to nuts. If there's a single book on the history of tobacco that should be on the shelves of every listener, there's this book, Golden Holocaust, by Dr. Robert N. Proctor. And I'm wondering if there's a similar book that is that comprehensive on coal and covers all the bases. And if not, there ought to be.
No, you've got to kind of piece it together for yourself. There are, for instance, books on the Hawk's Nest disaster, and the Hawk's Nest disaster isn't coal. That's silicosis, and that's when it became undeniable that particulate matter killed people. because it killed hundreds of people, mostly African Americans, working at damn near slave wages, digging a tunnel through Gawley Mountain to divert the New River to run a hydroelectric station for Union Carbide.
Mm-hmm.
But out of that, the science of dust gathered momentum. And every time somebody tried to talk about it in the coal mines, there was a coal executive or a politician there to shut it the hell down.
Yeah. Well, to me, it would be a natural project for someone who has read up and knows about the history, all aspects of the history of coal in this country and other countries besides. Simply because, as you noted, the parallels are so striking and so strong. I mean, even advertising. You take, if you're old enough to remember cigarette advertising in this country on television and radio and billboards and magazines and newspapers and tops of barns, for Christ's sake, you know, chew red pouch, you know, or mail pouch, whatever the hell it was. You can't turn on the Sunday morning shows or even Fox, CNN, or MSNBC without seeing a commercial or two for the coal industry.
And those ads are not there to encourage Emery and Marvoline to buy an extra ton to stock up for the winter.
Right. Well, back in the golden age of radio, back in the years before television, let's say the 30s, 40s, and, well, the 30s and 40s, certainly, before TV really began to catch on in the late 40s, I've listened to old radio shows, dramas or comedies or whatever, and heard commercials for, I think it was Blue Diamond or Blue something coal, the cleaner burning favorite.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, I may be a little off on the name, but blue was in the name of the product, blue something coal. So yeah, I mean somebody who knows something about really is steeped in this history needs to read Dr. Proctor's book, Golden Holocaust.
Well, you know, you can always read the works of Jeff Biggers. United States of Appalachia, Reckoning at Eagle Creek, those two have come immediately to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good bit of history tucked away in both of those.
Because this is serious stuff. I mean, and you know better than any of us here how serious this stuff is because you're down among it. pardon me. Well, anyway, I thanks for clearing it up on the C-SPAN video because I had no idea that they didn't deem it worthy for any sort of.
I should have known better than to think they would have. I mean, who cares about it? Because remember, Vernon was only there because the Democrats have a right to at least have a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was funny that the Republicans did not want to tangle with him. Even Dr. Body Language.
I wonder if programs like Rachel Maddow or Lawrence O'Donnell would have him on as a guest because I'm sure he could wax eloquently on the topic. In an engaging way and a beneficial way.
Well, the thing with all of those, and I have a little bit of experience in speaking to this, is that mm-hmm. It is a time intensive subject, and there's never enough time to do the topic the justice it deserves. But there never is. And so that's why I give it as much time here as I do, because it is a long-form subject.
Are there any documentaries on the topic?
Oh, God, yes. On Coal River. That comes, and then there's the Bobby Kennedy one, The Last Mountain. On Coal River is particularly good. And I'm trying to
Are these on YouTube, or could you actually find them on Amazon Prime or Netflix?
Oh, they're all over the place. There was a little flurry of documentary making about mountaintop removal a few years back. That was before we that was before the hillbillies got out sexied by fracking.
Because I love documentaries, and that's always
well. Look
a good
look up
entree.
On Coal River.
Okay.
You'll be glad you did.
But a well done documentary can serve its purpose quite nicely to give someone entree into the topic, and that's the key to this. People, you know, you've got to bring them along. I think, as with everything, but in this particular case, since there's such a dearth of knowledge or understanding of the problem or the awareness that such a problem exists, that you got to bring them up to speed.
And even documentary length becomes a bit of a struggle.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, anyway, thank you for clearing that up, because I looked at the schedule, the C-SPAN schedule twice, and so he said 10 o'clock. And, boy, there's everything else on that fucking schedule.
Yeah. No.
I'm telling you, it's a goddamn Duke's mixture of topics. Very few of which have any appeal at all, for me anyway, but maybe it's just me.
I suspect not. Well, Scott, thank you very kindly, and you have yourself a good evening, my friend.
All right, Bob, you too, and thanks again. You do such good stuff, and I wish I could do more on my end, you know, in terms of underwriting the show.
No, you don't have to say that, but I appreciate it. And, you know,
well,
hopefully...
when you talk about Netroots, it troubles me, because that's such a worthy thing, you know, to spread the word in that context. And, you know, I hope others will really take up that challenge. As much as I'd like to, I'm just in no place to do it. So I hope that they'll step in, you know. Because this is important stuff. It's life-changing stuff. But anyway, thanks again.
My pleasure, Scott. Thank you. You have a good evening. Later.
All right, take care.
Bye. That's our buddy Scott calling from San Diego. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut on the way out the door. Your conversation with Scott got me thinking. How about this wild theory? That Trump or one of his minions put a bug in Alex Jones's ear about maligning Robert Mueller's character by saying he overlooked or gave a pass to and essentially facilitated domestic minor sex trafficking. So that if Mueller does have evidence of Trump engaged in child rape and sexual abuse, conservatives can question and diminish Mueller's authority to go after Trump. Makes perfect sense to me, Darlene, because that's whataboutism. Plain and simple. In reality, tracking down and jailing sexual predators, Darlene continues, and stopping domestic minor sex trafficking was a big deal for Robert Mueller when he was FBI director. He always raised it during his testimony before various committees, noting how protecting the nation's children was extremely important to the FBI. Now retired Senator Barbara Mikulski, who chaired the Budget Appropriations Committee that oversaw the FBI, always noted how these issues were extremely important to Mueller, and she wanted to advocate for him to get sufficient dollars allocated to fight these horrendous crimes. Alex Jones's accusations are utter lies, but seemingly out of the blue, too. But they're not as out of the blue as you might think, Darlene, because remember, this is a Pizzagate guy. And everybody that isn't Alex Jones is a suspect. but it would not surprise, you know, I don't think he'd necessarily have to have a bug put in his ear. That might be the way he's thinking about it. You know, look, the guy's a multimillionaire. He spends a lot of time figuring out how to manipulate an audience that he knows is extremely manipulable, who can be led around by the bumps on their pointy little heads, who don't engage in reasoned reasoned cognition, but instead believe whatever most nearly confirms their biases. So it wouldn't surprise me in the least. And with that, we're out of here. We got $180 to finish John's challenge. And I'm going to leave that open with John's kind permission so that, because I didn't get to it till late in the program. So hopefully, maybe overnight, there'll be some response to that. We're nearing, but we've still got a right smart long ways to go to be able to get on the road and get down there and, as the saying goes, show the flag. But thanks, everybody, for all the help, and thanks to the Truth Seekers for their help, too. And thank you very kindly to all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you to those of you who financially support the program and keep it on the air. You're the only way it stays on the air. You know, they're going to draw the biggest Mega Millions ever tonight. If I happen to be the lucky guy, there will never be another fundraising pitch. Okay? Buy a ticket. Yeah, okay. And thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And yes, thanks go out always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.